Welcome to another edition of the Friar Phil Show. Hope you are doing well. I'm doing fine. Everything's working today. No technical difficulties so far, so that's always the start of a good day if you don't have any technical difficulties. Some breaking news I've got here. We've got a copy of a recording of the Padres pitching coach actually coaching Juan Soto. So let me play this and then we'll talk about it.
The less you do, the more you do. Let's see it pop up. Pop it up. That's not it at all. Do less. Get down. Try less. Do it again. Pop up. Nope. Too slow. Do less. Pop up. Pop up. You're doing too much. Do less. Pop down. Pop up now. Stop. Get down. Get down there. Remember, don't do anything. Nothing. Pop up. Well, you got to do more than that because you're just laying it right out. Looks like you're boogie boarding. Just do it. Feel it. Pop up. Yeah, that wasn't quite it, but we're going to figure it out there. Let's go surfing. The less you do, the more you do.
Remember that. The less you do, the more you do. That's funny. And speaking of funny, you remember last podcast, I played something by Frank the Tank Fleming, the Mets fan who loses his mind. Well, got some more audio of Frank today, and he's festive. He's not really pleased with the Mets right now. And I'm playing this stuff to let you know it's just not us Padres fans that are pissed off, angry, upset over the team not playing the way we thought it would play. So let me play Frank right quick, and then we'll get to our guest on the program. Here's Frank the Tank and his latest rant. If I can get the music to start. Ah, there. Here's Frank.
This team is feeble. They are not going to win. They're going to lose 100 fucking games. They're going to get dominated by the Nationals. Nationals are going to shut them out all three games. They're going to be in last place by Mother's Day. You watch. There's no heart. There is no fucking heart in this team. None. Every player we call up is a bum. Beatty, bum. Alvarez, bum. Everyone's a bust. They suck. And Sonny Marte has completely lost all skill and ability. And his team is done. Last year was a chance, they fucking blew it, and now they're gonna suck forever!
Forever, Frank. Forever, the Mets are going to suck. Which works for me the next time we play them. But A, because Frank is funny, B, because I might get him on as a guest, and C, because, like I said, it's just not our fan base with our team that's upset with their particular team. At the end of the program, I'll have some more audio, probably one of the best calls you'll ever hear into a radio program. And, well, I'll save that for the end. Right now, I've got on the line, I've got Javier Reyes, and he's with the Locked On Padres podcast. Hi, Javier.
Hey, what's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm doing good, doing good. I'm here in warm San Diego instead of in Chicago where the team was for the last 3 days. So I'm doing fine.
That's good, man. And look, I'm on the East Coast, so it can be, it goes up and down. I think the temperature is a little bit more than maybe the Chicago very cold weather, but, hanging in there and watching this lovely team of ours. I know you had to play the Frank rant, which is very funny. I think the Mets can be almost honestly, more melodramatic than Padres fans, to be quite honest with you. I think that was evidenced by last year when they claimed that they collapsed, even though they won like 100 games. I don't understand how that counted as a collapse. The Braves are just good. You know what I mean? And that's kind of, and maybe that's just what sports is, right? It's just, it's got to either be a collapse or it can't just be, hey, maybe the team was good. Maybe there's a little gray area, but hey, I'm still kind of rooting for the Mets as a side team because I love Francisco Lindor so much. every now and then. But it's also very funny to see them squirm. And of course, not when they play us.
I grew up as a Mets fan as a kid. Mm. So I always keep an eye on the Mets. Of course, I hear from people when I say that, saying, mm-hmm. how can you look at the Mets and watch the Mets and see what they do if you're a Padres fan? You know, you can be bisexual. Why can't I be bi team? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, I don't know. I've been very against the gatekeeping ways of fandom for a very long time. I mean, I literally just said I'm from Jersey and a Padres fan. That's a good example. I've just never understood it. And, you know, obviously you don't want to be too ridiculous. I don't want to say that I'm too liberal with it. But every now and then it's like, oh, how can you? You know what, man? Baseball, we've seen time and time again that there are owners who don't care whatsoever about their team. So I don't blame people for being like, you know what? The A's literally just moved out of my city. I'm going to go be a, I don't know, like a Philadelphia Phillies fan. I don't care. I don't think that rewarding loyalty should be the only thing that we do to judge fandom. I think it's totally fine to come up with different reasons based on where you're born, based on a player you like. Heck, I chose my football team that I can't say probably in Padres land because they left them. Mm-hmm. But I chose them when I was a kid, when I was like seven. Because of the cool lightning bolt on their uniforms, you know what I mean? So I just think that everybody should kind of, you know, life is too short, so just kind of do what makes you happy in that regard.
So tell me, how did you wind up in New Jersey and become a Padres fan?
Well, it started because the Bird app, the Twitter app, which is where you reached out to me on, is a lovely tool in a lot of ways. Some might argue not as much as of late. But I think it's very fun because I was just, you know, I just graduated school and I'd been looking for an out on the Yankees for a while. There's just a lot about them that I just strongly detest. I don't like their culture. I don't like their facial hair nonsense. I don't like the fan base that much. And I have a lot of friends who are still Yankees fans. I mean, I am on the East Coast after all, but I was kind of looking for an out and someone posted like, hey, if anyone wants to host the Padres podcast, or there was actually a bunch of teams that were available. It was the Cardinals, Giants, Pirates, a few others in the National League, and then I think Guardians and maybe Mariners or such. And I was like, well, I've been following the Padres a little bit because one of my friends, one of my closest friends is from San Diego originally. And, you know, when I first met him, he was like, yeah, man, the Padres stink or whatever. This is like pre-AJ Preller era. This is like, you know, Andrew Kashner and Seth Smith and all those guys, right? Like, not the best team in the world. And he kind of like got me at least just aware of what was going on. And since I was already, you know, a fan of that other football team who they were still in San Diego at the time, I was like, hey, I mean, if there's ever a team to go to, it would make sense for me to go where my football alliance is as well. So I did that. And when AJ Preller came along, I remember my friend just being like, what the heck? We just traded for Myers and Matt Kemp and all these things. And I was like, yeah, but those guys aren't going to help them win, right? Like, I may be an idiot, but I just don't think you can assemble a team that quickly. And he's like, yeah, probably not. But I also don't care because they never do stuff like this. And I always remember that. And I kind of kept it in my back pocket. And I was like, that's a good point. I kind of like the idea of a franchise just sort of changing its nature, you know, just going completely against what it usually is. Mm-hmm. And then this position came up, so I chose the Padres, and then they blew up and became even more fun. So that's kind of how it started back in early 2020, I believe, right before the world first ended. And then that's kind of what I did. And then here we are, and I kind of fell in love with the team, and now I'm on this show of yours with Friar Phil that I'm so excited about.
Yes.
It's amazing how things kind of work out.
Yeah, indeed it does. Let's talk about the Pittsburgh Pirates before we get into the Padres and what's wrong with them. I'm really impressed with this team. They're fun to watch. They seem to be doing everything, and I mean everything, I expected this lineup of the Padres to do when season started. I mean, they're getting timely hits. They're hitting home runs. They're hitting into the gap. They get the 5.5 hole sometime. They just hit in the right places and move the runners along and play small ball, situational baseball. And I'm so impressed with what they're doing. It just blows my mind, and it makes me even sadder when I look at what we're doing with the Padres. What do you think about the Pirates?
The Pirates vibes are just immaculate right now. I mean, on top of, and I think it's, I'm so happy for that fan base right now, because, you know, that's another ownership that could be questionable and whatnot, but, and we'll see how long it lasts. It is still so early in the season, but, you know, they made a very like pro fan move when they brought back Andrew McCutchen, who has been an MVP before. He's been awesome. He's played well against the Padres before, certainly, but he's been a great player for a long time, but he's past his prime. And it was kind of a move that they made that was like, you know, let's bring back this guy who can at least still be in a lineup. You know, he's going to be our DH mostly. And he's just a cool player. He's a fun personality. He's a fun follow on Instagram and all that stuff. He was great during the pandemic. All the videos he was posting of his mustachioed kind of alter ego is really fun. So just a fan favorite, and also a Pittsburgh Pirates fan favorite. So that's kind of what, like, I feel like started just the good vibes for Pittsburgh. And then they started playing really well. And it's interesting because they've done it without, you know, O'Neill Cruz, who's like their superstar phenom player, who's hurt and going to be on the injury list for a while longer. But they've had the guys step up. They have former Padre Tucapito Barcado on this team. And, you know, Brian Reynolds, a player that I have heard rumors about this man being traded for longer than literally anything I've ever heard of in my life. I swear we've finished three election cycles by the time Brian Reynolds finally signed this extension recently. And what's crazy, he's also playing super well. He's finally living up to the trade rumor hype. He's always been a good player, but he's really kind of having a phenomenal season this year. He's been the leader of that team. And then even guys who aren't hitting, they just have a lot of average players. And I know that sounds like an insult, but they don't have anyone that's like just drastically underperforming. You know what I mean? And I think that's what's the case with the Padres right now. So with the Pirates, it's just a lot of guys, you know, they don't have like an ace pitcher just yet, but they don't have anyone who's got like a 6.8 ERA either. So that's kind of what I think has been the strength of the team, on top of playing a weird division that's not the strongest in baseball. And it's just cool. It's cool that they're finally seeing like outside the cave. They finally see a little bit of a light since they've been in rebuild so long. And, you know, Ke'Bryan Hayes is another star of theirs, not hitting well, but he's still an electric defender. So every kind of aspect, I don't know how much longer it's going to go. I don't think it'll go that much longer. I still think teams like the Brewers are better, even though I despise the Brewers in a lot of ways. But it's still cool that this is the first time they've been like washable. Not too long ago, there was that play. I don't know if you saw it with Javier Baez. I think it was a couple of years ago, when he got the first baseman to chase after him on a ground ball as he was running to first.
Yeah, I saw it.
He just completely forgot the rules of the game. So, like, you know, you see that play and you look at them now, and it's just, I don't know, it cheers me up. You know what I mean? Just to see them kind of performing admirably and at least giving their fans a good product.
I put up on my Twitter earlier today a montage of Fernando Fernando Tatis Jr.'s best plays from the past. And with most of them being with the blue and white uniform. But it was kind of fun to watch because it got me excited again about Fernando Tatis Jr. And what he can do. And it'll be really interesting to see what he does as he progresses along. He's in the infancy now of playing because, you know, it's been 2 years since he's been on a baseball field. And already he's doing good. So by the time it's the end of May, I'll be really interested to see, you know, what he's done, how many stolen bases, how many home runs, how many RBIs. It'll be really, really interesting to see that. So I'm a fair Fernando Tatis fan. You know, the steroid thing, the illegal cream. Yeah, really pissed me off the way some people took it. Yeah, he had ringworm. Now this might be a medication or a cream mom or grandma or whoever always used around the house. You know, he got it. I guess he had to get it by prescription though from the doctor. When we get tubes of cream from our doctor for any, you know, ailment that we have, most of us, if not all of us, don't really sit there and read the specific ingredients, you know, the chemistry of the cream. And he didn't do that. And unfortunately, he tested positive for the substance that's banned, that's in the cream, and he got suspended. But for people, you know, like these idiots in Chicago to be standing up in the goddamn bleachers yelling, he's on steroids. He's on steroids. You know, I'm like, fuck you. He put some cream on to solve a ringworm problem. Mm-hmm. He put cream on. You know, suspension of a couple of weeks or something, or a month, would have been appropriate, you know. But we're sticking by the rules. And they have him out for such a long time. I just thought it was fucking ridiculous. And I think it's ridiculous now for anybody to have anything to say about him and using steroids. I don't know. How do you feel about that?
It's, I will say one thing is that his initial coming out to defend it, you had his dad coming out to defend it. It just didn't come off right. And I think that another issue with the Tatis suspension, and while I do mostly agree with you on the sense that I've always just, I understand why players may get dicey about anything that's called a PED, whatever it is, just because, you know, that's affecting them more than it's affecting us. You know what I mean? It's affecting the playing field and blah, 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 blah. You saw what happened with the Astros, right? I'm not saying that this is even close to the Astros thing, but it's, you know, just the idea of the reputation of the game and whatnot. But
hang on. If we're going to talk about the Astros, I need to get my garbage can.
Stop it. Stop it. Here it is. Oh, man. Stop it. Don't you dare. There it is. There it is.
Okay. I'm sorry I interrupted.
No, it's fine. It's fine. It's just, I understand a player perspective, but with fans, I just find that you shouldn't be getting on teams as much and as players. And I'm not saying that, you know, nobody, that just because everyone's got issues doesn't mean that you critique things. That's not what I'm saying. But I do sometimes look at this and say, all right, you know, Giants fans, they're going to raise some issues. Well, you know, again, I understand if you get annoyed, but I think fans is a little bit different. And if you're a fan, if you're a Giants fan, for just as an example, and you're making fun of Tatis for this, it's like, well, go look up Logan Webb. You know what I'm saying? Like, he had something from a few years ago. I think this idea that cheaters are only from, or people who have broken the rules, you know, that that's only one team that has that, right? The New York Yankees have plenty of that. The Boston Red Sox have plenty. Lord knows the Astros had some, right? So it's just, I just think this idea of, it's not exclusive to one team. And I think that when fans start making it a thing to be like, oh, well, your team has a cheater. It's like, well, I can probably go find someone on the Cubs. You know,
Sammy Sosa. Sosa.
There we go. That's what I was going to say, right? Like,
every time they were chanting, he's on steroids, I go, Sammy Sosa.
Yeah.
You dumb bastards.
Yeah. It's just kind of like, I don't know. I've never gotten into that. And to be honest, I think that one thing we've learned is just that the PED thing, it has changed dramatically the way that I think it affects players on the field in terms of just like, you know, I remember D. Gordon got popped. D. Strange Gordon got popped for this like not a few years ago, but, you know, a while back.
Right.
And that was a one home run a year with speed guy. You know, this wasn't just all power hitters. And then you see, you know, Tatis come back, and granted, it's a small sample size, but if you also take into account AAA, he's still hitting home runs and stuff like that. Like, he's still a really good player, and it looks like not too much has changed. So I think that's one thing that has changed, is this idea of, like, the steroids making a whole player. Some people may bring up, like, the Brady Anderson year, which is the most famous, like, example ever of a guy who went from hitting 18 home runs to 50. It's like one strange year. Like, it's a very famous one. Everybody can go look that up. It's hilarious when you look at it. But I also just find myself just, I don't have, like, it just feels like a waste of time for me to get mad at people who are cheating at sports sometimes. I get it. And it's fun to make jokes about it. You made the trash can joke up at the Astros, but I try not to make it like this real thing, like it's a personal thing, like I hate your team because you have this.
Yeah, after all, he didn't go and smack around people and children or whatever, like, yeah, Clevenger.
There's a lot worse things,
Clevenger,
worse characters than we have in all sports.
Yeah,
that, and I'm not, and again, I'm not here to also say, well, you're awful because you root for the Memphis Grizzlies, or you're awful because you root for the White Sox. No, like, it's so complicated, and there's other players we might not even know about. I get that. but I would be very careful to not throw stones if I'm a fan when it comes to these issues. You want to just make fun of a player for being bad? Go for it. You want to say, oh, Tatis, you know, you missed the MVP. I don't know. You can't really make fun of him because he's such a great player, but you get my point, right? Like, that's be more creative. That's always been my thing. And I just think with the cheating and stuff, that it's just not, look, I got hatred for plenty of other people, and none of them are in the sports realm.
Right.
Not really, anyway. Not a big fan of some guys in the NBA right now, but, you know, in baseball, I've got a couple. Madison Bumgarner is one I really don't like. Joe Kelly being another. But, you know, I just – it's not the world that I would be going on. I think that he's a goober. I think he deserves to be reprimanded. This is you should have known to ask. You should have been out there, you know, checking and making sure. They just made the trade for Soto. You got busted for the motorcycle incident, and you forego the shoulder surgery. So just a lot of things is for me why the Tatis thing became such an issue. Not just that in a vacuum, but the fact that you were already on, like, you know, thin ice. And then you got did this right after the Soto trade, just took out a lot of the momentum and stuff from the announcement. That's what I think is what drove a lot of people nuts, myself included.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. Juan Soto, you know, I've been thinking about him, and when he's in the cage, he's hitting pretty good.
Yes, he is.
When he gets up to the plate, there's a problem, you know? And if there's a problem, you know, he said, well, nobody's telling me how to fix it. He should know how to fix it himself. He knows what worked in Washington. You know, he's putting his feet too far apart, it looks like. And I'm wondering, you know, he had that oblique issue. Was it the oblique that was bothering him?
I think it was oblique or hamstring. It was like right before the season started, and that's why they held him out of a couple spring training games. Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that still irritates him and he's keeping quiet about it, because this is just absolutely bizarre and strange. You know, you take somebody that was that good, you know, in Washington, D.C., and you bring him here and he's lousy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or standing there watching things go right down the middle of the plate and looking for balls for walks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't bring him here to walk or to lead off. We brought him here for power. We brought him here to help us win games. And I don't know what I'd like to hear your feelings about Juan Soto and what you think is up and what he should do.
I mean, it's got to be emphasized that there has never been a player of his caliber at his age with his sample size of success to be traded. And that's only step one. That's already crazy that he got traded from the Nationals. I understand why they did it, and I think they got a good package in return. But it's not about that. It's just that if there was ever a case for a team having a curse, if you believe in that stuff, Juan Soto's 2023 season, and in general since he joined the Padres, is as good of a case you can bring up. This guy is a lifetime 280 hitter. He's a lifetime, if you don't want to go by that, you don't like batting average, whatever. He's a lifetime 421 on-base percentage. You don't like that. He's a lifetime 518 slugging percentage. You don't like that. He's got a 151 WRC+. What does he have this year? He's got a 98 WRC+, 2% worse than the average player at the plate. It's just so frustrating. He's been a guy that's walked like 6% more than the times he strikes out. And this year it's the opposite. He's still got a good walk rate. I appreciate the walks. That still means a lot for sure. But not from what you were expecting. This is a guy who's supposed to, he was the highest projected guy for MVP odds heading into this season. And he comes into this, and I just looked it up actually while recording. It was an oblique injury that apparently he suffered a little bit like as the season started. And maybe that's a reason for what's going on. But then at that point, you must wonder, well, all right, then just sit him, like, figure this out. Because, yeah, I appreciate him playing, and I respect if he is playing hurt. Like, I always respect when guys are able to do that, even if I don't think they should. But he's hitting more balls, more pop-ups to the infield. He's striking out on more stuff down the middle, like you mentioned. And he sees a lot of pitches go by. And I get that he's got a great eye at the plate. And some of the strikeouts are really close. But they're nipping the corners, and you still can't allow, you know, those pitches to go by you. You know what I'm saying? You still have to swing the bat at some point. And, you know, his max power, you've seen it. I was there for one of the games. He hit a ball 450 feet, and that was great. but then he goes back to being a ground out guy. It's into double plays. He's just, he just stands there, and it's, they say maybe it's his place in the lineup. You know, we just saw Melvin actually change up the lineup. I don't know when people are going to hear this, but they changed it up. They put Manny Machado fifth for only the second time in his career, and he went 2-4 with a home run, you know, and a single. Yeah. Like, maybe they need to move Soto around in the lineup. And, you know, maybe there's a, they say that it could be the pitch clock, which I fully love the pitch clock. I think it's been great for the game to adapt and evolve in some ways, even if for me it is still weird sometimes. But they say maybe that's throwing off his timing. He's way too talented of a player to keep playing like this. But I think the idea that there's zero concern just because you pull up his baseball savant page and he's in like the 90th plus percentile in hard hit rate and exit velocity, all the nerdy stats, right? Just because that's what pops up does not mean you should be 0% concerned. I am, because it's been a long enough sample size since he's joined the Padres.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, he's a guy that knows what he's doing with his balls. Oh, wait a minute, that doesn't sound good. with his baseballs.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And you expect that. A curse, though. That's an interesting thing. Everybody out there that's paying, get your rattles out. Let's uncurse Juan Soto, okay? You bring up a lot of good points about him.
Mm.
And I like him, and I don't want to see him traded. There's lots of rumors going around that he may be on the trading block so we can get Ohtani.
Mm.
What do you think about that?
I saw that a little bit. A friend of mine actually floated that idea. First of all, it's hilarious. Just in the sense of, like, from a, oh my God, perspective, oh, it's the most incredible thing ever. The idea that the Angels, since they know they're probably losing Ohtani, they go and make a deal for Juan Soto. I don't think it helps. I don't think it makes a lot of sense. I feel like at that point, you just would rather just try and extend Ohtani, because at least he's still there, and at least you're still with Mike Trout and them. But it is pretty funny. I just think that with Soto, you traded so much for him that you kind of have to just play it out and hope that he does better. He's clearly trying. He's taking batting practice seriously. This is not a case of not trying. This isn't, in fact, that's hardly ever a case with any athlete. That's not how they got there in the first place.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. So I've never really been a subscriber to that belief, but you know, I just think they have to let it play out. I think they have to let it play out. They have to hope that his talent is going to come through, and he's going to figure it out. Because if he does, then this team has one of the better lineups in the game. And you know, the other thing is, he's not the only one struggling. Manny Machado's the other one.
Yeah,
he
did better in the five hole.
Yeah,
down
exactly.
there than he did it too.
It's like, I don't know why that was fixed everything. Apparently, we'll see how he plays in this upcoming weekend series. But
well, Melvin said he was going to move him up in the order on Ben and Woods this morning. Bob Melvin was on there, and he said he's going to move him up a little bit more in the order. If it's me, I would put him around where he was, you know. Give him a vote of confidence. Put him in fourth. You know, as a cleanup hitter, something, you know, because he likes to swing for home runs. So let's clean up the bases and put Soto in third, where he wants to be, where he's most comfortable. You know, right now, part of getting back to Soto for a minute, I think a lot of it's psychological with him as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, said he wants to play third, not second. And he's got that in his head, and somehow he feels, I don't know. I don't know how he feels, really. But you know, maybe that has something to do with it, too. You know, leave him in the place where he's comfortable. What's it going to hurt? I mean, at this point, almost a month into the season, what's it going to hurt? Not a goddamn thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I think that they're going to start trying. And I applaud Melvin, and I understand, like, you want to just keep, you know, I mean, it's still so early, and you don't want to just change everything because the first few games don't work. Like, these guys are really established pros, you know what I mean? Like, they've been there for a while, and like Tatis is like the least proven, and he's amazing. Like, we love him and stuff, but he's like technically between the four, like the least proven, and you're not going to just demote him down the order. And he's been great so far, so they win it anyway, but it's just, it's so frustrating to see a player like him struggle like this. And, you know, he's not hitting breaking pitch as well, 135 against them this year, which is crazy. And fastballs, I mean, we've said it a lot, but just letting them go right down the middle. He's hitting 200 against them this year. He usually creams that stuff, you know. And one of the things is, it's not like he's always been great against off-speed pitches necessarily, but it usually wouldn't matter, because if you threw him anything that wasn't, he would put it in the bleachers or he would take a walk. So even if he wasn't able to hit your nasty curveball, it didn't matter because he might not even swing at it in the first place. So that's just kind of been the frustrating thing with Soto. I don't know, like, what's happened. And if you subscribe to a curse, look, I get it. And I was one of those people who, I wasn't against the Soto trade. I remember while I was working, it happened while I was working, and I lost my mind, and it was great. It was a lot of fun, and I still like the move in a vacuum. But it's also true, I also was one of those people, I didn't think they needed to do it. I just, you already have Tatis. Now, granted, I did not know Tatis was going to be suspended. Right. So that was a thing that I didn't expect. But you have him and Machado. I just don't think that that's how winning baseball teams usually are constructed. Not that they can't be, but my thing was, I'm all for trading for Soto in a vacuum because, yeah, you trade for a superstar like that anytime. But if you already have a Machado and Tatis, do you need to give up all your other assets, like all of them? Hey, say you want to trade CJ Abrams, no problem. But do you want to trade Abrams, Gore, Wood, Hassel, and everybody else? You know what I'm saying? For one player?
Yeah.
That's more of the question than it is, you know.
And now Mackenzie Gore pitched yesterday, I think. He did a real good job. Other people that we've given away, Joey Lucchese pitched yesterday. He went five innings. He did okay. Mm. He's back from his surgery, and he's pitching for the Mets now. And it just seems when people leave the Padres, they seem to start playing better. And that's weird. Mm. You might hear some meowing in the background. My regular listeners know that that's my cat, Nikki. Here she comes. She's putting her... What's that about Juan Soto? You like him? What else? Well, I guess that was it. Just she likes Juan Soto.
Fair enough.
Now she's going to eat something and shut up. She's 14 years old, so.
Wow.
She's set in her ways.
Love that.
So on a whole now, what do you think this lineup needs to do? You know, obviously we need to score more runs. We need to get more runners in scoring position in. But, you know, I think there are other things that they have to work on, too. You know, I don't know if you see this or not, but when we are behind, all of a sudden the idea of playing small ball or situational baseball goes away, and they all go up there swinging for the fences trying to get a home run to catch up. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of shit you got to stop, and that's something the manager has to stop, or the pitching coach, or the batting coach, or any goddamn coach. Somebody. I mean, can't they see that? If I can see that watching it, and I'm sitting here in my studio and I'm looking at it, and I can see they're swinging to the fences because they're hitting themselves in the ass with the bat, and you got somebody on second and third, you know, where is that situational baseball, you know? I think it goes away when we get behind in a game. I don't know.
Yeah.
How do you feel about it?
I think that's just a product of how baseball's played now. It's proven to be, at least for the regular season, to be a thing that just more home runs equals more wins, which is, I know that sounds pretty like simple, but that seems to be where we're at. Not that every team has to be like that. And the Mets, one thing about that team is, you know, they don't have a lot of power, but they have guys that can certainly do it. They rip doubles. They have like a bunch of Xander Bogartses almost. That's kind of like the vibe of their offense. Like, yeah, they might hit like 15 home runs a year, you know, your Brandon Nimmo types and whatnot. But they also have guys that are just going to take walks. They're very patient at the plate. Like, you can't get them to swing at garbage usually. So that's really big on them. And with the Padres, I know what you're saying. Like, they just kind of, they don't have that vibe of, oh, but this Padres lineup, it ain't over till it's over. No, when the Padres are down by like three, I'm already like, yeah, that's what it's been like this year. They've been one of the worst teams in baseball with hitting runners in scoring position. I think only the Royals have been worse, which, that says a lot. And I think that there has been some positives. Xander Bogaerts, immediate return on investment, right? Xander Bogaerts has been absolutely phenomenal, yeah. And I like his defense too.
Definitely.
He's been great. He's been great. And then Matt Carpenter has also been very, very good. He draws walks, which is very important. And while his batting average isn't the best in the world, he can still put one in the seats. And to be honest, for a guy that you signed at age 36, if you're going to be a power-hitting DH with good walks and all that, great. 139 WRC plus on the air. Like, he's been phenomenal. And Cronenworth has been about average. He's kind of been okay. You know what I mean? He can be better. I think I want to see more walks from him especially. But he's had a lot of clutch hits for the team for sure this year, more than others. But then after that, it's like, you know, Grisham, I think, looks better this year. I think he's hitting for better power. I think he's been more aggressive. But even still, he needs to cut on the strikeouts a bit. He's got the second highest, I think, K rate on the team behind Nelson Cruz, which isn't great that the only one worse at striking out than you is the guy who's like 48 years old. But aside from that, the Soto and the Manny Machado stuff has been just unbelievable. All of that, like between those two alone, the fact that they're not producing is just insane.
Yeah.
And again, all these stats can change so quickly. Like after just a weekend series, all of a sudden Manny could be in the positive and Tatis could be more in the positive. He's only played a few games, so I'm not really counting him. Seven to be exact, but it's just, they just got to play to what they are. You can't be, no one's asking, you know, Nelson Cruz to be what he was before. No one's asking, you know, Ha-Seong Kim to be an incredible, you know, Ben Zobrist of the Rays in his prime or anything like that. Right? Like, you just have to be average. Because in theory, if you have Xander, Tatis, Manny, and Soto, those guys will carry the rest of the load for you. And right. Manny Machado's former team, the Orioles, was very similar to this. Their team was I like to call it, they were just like, we have four guys that are getting 40 home runs. Screw you. Like, we don't care about the rest of our team. They barely had a good starting pitcher. And they were great. They were really, really good. I remember watching those teams. They were a blast. And I'm not saying that all these guys have to hit home runs. But in theory, just having a bunch of average offensive players and then those four, it should almost be like, who cares? And what's funny is the Padres also have starting pitching too. They've got a good bullpen. They have some ace relievers in there. And they have some guys who could play good defense. So that's what's been so frustrating is it's all there to at least not be horrible. I'm not saying they're going to break the wins record from the Mariners in 2001, but it's all there to be a very competitive and very fun team. They just haven't been that so far.
Yeah. I want to play this audio. This is a fan that called into 1000 ESPN AM, and that's in Chicago. And this is...
I heard this. Yeah, I've heard this. Yeah, it's great.
it's a Chicago Whites fan. It's probably one of the best radio calls from a caller that you'll ever hear. And while you're listening, I want you all to think about how much of what he's saying applies to the Padres now. So let's give it a go, and then I'll finish up with you and get some last points when this is finished.
Berto is on the West Side. You're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Berto?
What's going on, guys? Listen, first of all, huge fan, long-time listener, first-time caller. I know regardless of your individual allegiances, I love that you both look at these things objectively and you provide a service to the fans of Chicago. We owe you a debt of gratitude. I've been a diehard Chicago White Sox fan for nearly 40 years. I say that with the very express intent of sharing my deep and undying love for this team. And my call is rooted in heartbreak, not anger. Don't get me wrong. I'm angry. But it is a byproduct of a dysfunctional, abusive relationship with the front office and the ownership of the Chicago White Sox. I also want to say I have defended this rebuild. I liked what the team did with the trades. I defended Yasmani in Dallas. I didn't understand the La Russa hire, but I gave them the benefit of the doubt. I forgave the free agents they let go. I was befuddled by the Benintendi and Clevinger signings. But you know what? I said, I'm going to give them one last shot. And when they canceled Sox Fest, like the cowards they are, I knew something was up. But now we know. Obviously, the experiment is over. The vast majority of the prospects have been busts. The product on the field is pathetic. We have exactly two players of excellence on this roster, Dylan Cease and Tim Anderson. Everyone else is nowhere near the kind of player they need to be to make this a winning team. You'd think that would be enough to wake this organization up. But yesterday, Kenny Williams had the gall to say that he's not in a good place right now, yeah, and accountability is not an issue. You're right, he's not in a good place. He's not in a job he should have. Think about all the promises that Rick Hahn made, mired in mediocrity, that he bragged about Romy Gonzalez in spring training, and I'll trade him if I get the right price. Think about the things Grifol said, come to the park, we're going to kick everyone's butt. They must have been talking about the fans, not the other teams. The entire lineup is batting under .220. The best hitter on the team is Jake Berger. We're a Triple-A team. Our right fielders are hitting .180 with a weighted run created plus of .28. I don't even need to tell you about the pitching staff. Katz has got to go. Moncada, T.A., Eloy, Yaz, Joe Kelly. It's week four. They've all already been hurt. Tens of millions of dollars on replacement level players while stars go elsewhere. We're 11 games under .500. The Bears needed 6 months to get 11 games under .500. We needed 3 weeks. In the 15 years of Rick Hahn, we have been a constant experiment that has never panned out. In the 25 years of Kenny Williams, we had exactly one season of excellence with a perfect storm of players that has not once come even close to being the same. I don't want to hear about the strength of schedule in April, or with the money we've spent, the players we have playing .500 ball should be underachieving, not 11 games under .500. We keep going after players that Rick Hahn liked 5 years ago. Lance Lynn, over the hill. Yaz, over the hill. Benintendi, he wanted him in the draft 6 years ago. He's got a .1 war. Clevinger isn't just a clubhouse cancer and a disgusting human being. He's a horrendous pitcher. Joe Kelly has been useless. We signed Vince Velasquez. Give me a break. John Jay, Yonder Alonso. Between them, that's $200 million on a bunch of black holes and an ERA of 240. The entire organization is poisoned. The entire way that they go about their business is a failure. Firing Rick isn't enough. Firing Kenny isn't enough. If Chris Getz gets promoted and we have to sit through another 15-year retool rebuild, you're just going to hear from me again in 2038. I don't care if we go on a torrid winning streak in May and June and somehow get back to .500 ball, and then we scooch our way into the postseason and the wild card, only to get bounced right away by a team that's actually good. We have no depth in our organization. One injury and we are done. This process isn't working. Our farm system has been in the bottom 10 for 45 years, aside from the one frame of time when they traded all our talent away and graduated them all right up, and then we were the worst again. There is one solution. In his final years, Jerry Reinsdorf, who, by the way, wouldn't even have the reputation he has if he hadn't have lucked upon Michael Jordan at three in 1984, has the courage to get rid of the yes men around him and fire everyone. He bought into the Chicago Bulls and the White Sox for $20 million. He's worth $2 billion now. He needs to use a fraction of that money he made on the backs of Chicago's blue-collar baseball fans and pay for a front office to come and rebuild everything. Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams cannot be trusted to rebuild this team again. They need to retire and go off into the sunset and play golf with the millions of dollars they made on their cushy paychecks for a job that they had a longer leash for than any executive in the history of the modern era of baseball. Let someone qualified come in and run this team.
Isn't that fantastic?
It's a work of art. It really is. It's so good. And I remember watching that last night, and I said this to a friend of mine who was like, yeah, like a friend of mine who's a White Sox fan. And he said that so many people had said it to him as well. Just really, And it's so funny because he covered everything about the White Sox, like every single thing, including I really enjoyed the part about the farm system has been bad for 45 years. That was really funny. And I enjoyed the thing at Jerry Reinsdorf, who has been an enemy, an arch nemesis of mine for a little bit, ever since the Last Dance documentary came out. And I'll tell you why. And it's because I really like that documentary. I like the memes. I love the content that it inspired, especially during the time when we had nothing else to watch. But I didn't like how much that documentary ganged up on Jerry Krause, who is no longer with us and couldn't defend himself. And they're acting as if Jerry Reinsdorf, who owns the damn team, was just powerless to stop anything that was happening with that Bulls team that fell apart. Right? Like, it's just, I don't know, Jerry. Yeah, it's just all he did. You own the team.
Yeah, you own it. You've got some kind of say. What the hell's wrong with you?
You have a little bit of a say. So, like, if you were any – and what probably happened is he didn't like that Michael Jordan was the face of that franchise, which he should have been, and he still is 40 years later, right? Like, he still is the face of the whole time. And he's right. It's like, yeah, he lucked upon Michael Jordan at number three, and that's it. And it's just – it's incredible that and that's what I didn't like about the documentary is how little it actually blamed him. He put everything on Jerry Krause, who's no longer with us. And it's like, yeah, he had some issues and clearly had a little bit of an inferiority complex. But you don't think that Reinsdorf doesn't have that? He can't stand that no one's talking about him, probably. That's how all rich people are. So I really appreciated that part. But I will say, I don't think the Padres are there yet. I think they were once upon a time.
Oh, yeah.
But I do think that since Preller took over, it's a new regime. I really do think that. And they've had some winning seasons. Well, the White Sox, it's like, man, like everything has been a bust for them. I feel bad because that team was kind of like, in terms of excitement factor, they had that one year where they were like kind of like the Padres of the American League with Tim Anderson and, you know, Eloy and Luis Robert and, you know, Dylan Cease is doing well. Lucas Giolito is doing well. They had some really cool stuff. He has Manny Grandal when he was still good. So I feel really bad, but it is calls like that. You just let the fan cook. You know what I mean? And I'm so happy that they did. They just let him keep going, and it was great. And it makes me miss radio broadcasting, too. It's really good stuff.
Yeah, you beat radio, that's for sure. So I want to leave everybody with this. Think about it for a minute. I played you Frank the Tank Fleming at the beginning of the program, and he's a Mets fan. This was obviously a White Sox fan. Other teams are doing worse, especially the White Sox, than we are doing now. So all is not lost. We are what? Let's see. Oh, it's not on here because we're not playing a game. Let me go back. Yeah, 13-14. So that's not, you know, the best record in the world. But then the Dodgers are 13-13. Tonight they're playing the St. Louis Cardinals, who is another team that's not doing very well and probably worse than us and worse than the Dodgers. So we'll see if any miracles can happen in that game tonight. Javier, great program. We're out of time, unfortunately. And I will definitely have you back again.
Yeah, man, this was a super fun time. My schedule's a bit busy, so sorry about that. But really happy to hop on. And it was a delight. And thank you for also playing the White Sox rant again. I absolutely enjoyed hearing that.
Yeah, me too. These days we need something to smile about. Okay, everybody, absolutely. Take care. I'll see you next time. And by all means, watch your back and keep your heart and your mind open. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.